Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back in. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Joining us right now, Bob Condotta, my best friend of the Seattle Times. Bob, how are you?
Good, Stacey. How you doing?
Good. I miss you in the media room, Bob. I miss our time sitting together. It's just such a special time. I'm going to go ahead and get started with quickly this news about Michael Kendricks. We've seen that this is from ESPN's Adam Schefter, the Hawks signing him back, and this looks like he's signing to the practice squad. Are we expecting him to be activated off of that anytime soon?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I confirmed that as well, and was able to talk to some people about it. And yeah, the new way that the practice squad works, you know, you can really do this to add roster flexibility to things if you can get guys to agree to do it. You know, they've had three pretty big name veterans now that have agreed to do it with Randall and Snacks Harrison and now Kendricks. You know, Kendricks' situation, obviously he had the ACL injury last year, and so that was one of the big things for him, was showing teams whether he's healthy and recovered and all of that. He had some workouts with some teams a couple weeks ago, including Seattle. The word at the time was that was just sort of a look-see to see where he is. Kendricks had a workout after that with the Raiders. I would assume the Raiders didn't offer him a spot on their 53 either. I assume he would have taken that if they had. So maybe this was sort of his best option for now. Certainly, you know, he's hoping to work his way on to being on the 53. But, you know, the Seahawks, as they've done the last two games with Randall, they can just, you know, take that time and go to Saturday and elevate these guys if they feel like they need it, you know, so they can kind of get a look at Kendricks. I assume he's going to be able to practice immediately, but, you know, we'll see on that if he's able to practice, right away, or if he needs a few days to work his way into it or whatever. And that's part of why you can use the practice squad thing here, you know, as they did with Snacks Harrison, where, you know, they felt like he wasn't going to be ready to play immediately. And since you have this ability to put anybody with any years of experience on the practice squad and elevate them if they do get ready by the end of the week, you know, you create that much more roster flexibility for yourself. So, but, you know, with Kendricks, obviously he doesn't need to learn the system or any of that. I mean, he's started 17 games for them the last couple of years. So it's just a matter for him. It's going to be of getting into football shape as quickly as he can.
Okay, Bob, I'm not going to mention Adam Schefter again on this show, but this guy, let's just say Schmadam Schmefter, also said that Antonio Brown's suspension is eligible to end after week 8, and the Seahawks are now positioned to make a big push to sign him. How realistic is this? Because we've been hearing this rumor off and on for what feels like 20 years now, but basically all summer.
For sure. I mean, it's easy. I mean, Russell Wilson, you know, said on national TV last year that he would push for the Seahawks to sign Antonio Brown. You know, so that's where, you know, a lot of this is coming from. I think Russell is enamored by Antonio Brown and what he thinks he could add to the team. You know, it's obviously interesting just in how well the Seahawks receivers have played. You know, what kind of dynamic would that create there if you add him to the mix, along with having, with the start that DK Metcalf is off to and what Lockett's done. But this is a team that has legitimate Super Bowl, obviously. You know, that's their goal, is to win the Super Bowl. They're kind of a position in a Super Bowl or bust mode, and especially when you get off to the kind of start they have already. And, you know, nobody in the NFC looks like a team that the Seahawks can't beat. So if you could add a guy like that and somehow make it work, and, you know, I think that's what Russell's saying behind the scenes, is, you know, I'll be the buffer here, and I'll make sure this works, and sort of trust me on this. So, you know, Seattle has, as you pointed out, I mean, they've sort of been kind of in it from the start. You know, I asked Pete Carroll at some point in the last couple of months about it, I think before he was suspended, and you know, he sort of just gave the typical never say never kind of thing. And that's, you know, I'm sure they will look into it and investigate it and keep it out there. And, you know, they've got Josh Gordon on the roster, but his suspension, we still don't know if or when that's ever going to be lifted. And so, you know, you could certainly look at the receiving core and be like, if there's a way to make this work, you know, this could, you know, even if it just wins you one game somewhere along the way, that could be the game that gets you to the Super Bowl.
Bob, you made a pretty bold statement here with an article that you wrote talking about the Seahawks' opportunities to get to the Super Bowl after a 5-0 start, and basically just saying, no, they can't with the amount of yardage that they're giving up. Can you walk us through how you came to that conclusion?
I guess the format of that article was, here's five things they got to get better at, and so you sort of have to agree they got to get better at them if you're gonna pose that question. Can they set the all-time NFL record for yards allowed and win the Super Bowl? I still think that's going to be tough to do. I think they got to get better on defense. That feels like sort of a no-brainer statement to just say that you're not going to be able to keep allowing that many yards every single game and get to the Super Bowl. With some of the offenses they're gonna play, and you just can't keep putting your offense up against that every single game and having Russell Wilson's amazing, and I put absolutely nothing by him, but at some point in the NFL that can be really hard to just keep doing week after week after week, to have to go out there and make the kind of plays he has to pull these games out. And and they've given up a lot of yards to, you looked at the Minnesota game and thought, well, Minnesota played pretty well and they've got a pretty good running game, and then you see them the next week and they look terrible. Dallas obviously is a lot different without Dak Prescott, but still, the Seahawks were just run all over the field by them, and then you see Dallas, look like the most feeble offensive team, one of the most feeble offensive teams around, a couple of weeks later. So it's just sort of, I just think they got to get better there. But as I think I pointed out in the story, I assume they will. If you get Jamal Adams back, you get Quentin Dunbar to playing I think this bye week could be really good for him. Just kind of the everything. Obviously, he had kind of a crazy offseason, and then it's had some injuries, and his ability to really take over and man that other quarterback spot. Once you get Jamal Adams back and you sort of get that foursome in the back end playing together consistently, everybody being healthy and out there, you sort of forget Quandre Diggs, basically missed an entire game as well when he was suspended early and when he got thrown out of the one game early. These four guys have just not played together a whole lot, and that's a really big thing in the secondary. And we've seen a lot of the big plays be busted coverages and things like that. And so I think you square that up, I think they'll get a lot better there. And if you can keep the defensive line healthy, obviously they lost Bruce early and Rasheem Green hasn't played much. But if you get Rasheem back and, you're getting Alton Robinson into the mix now, maybe you get Darrell Taylor back at some point. But, if you add Snacks Harrison to that, I think you got a better defensive line than you've had much of this season as well. And so, I think that's sort of the hopeful point, is even just without even having to make any significant moves at the trade deadline, they could get a lot better defensively the rest of the year. And I do think they're going to have to get better to really win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you, Bob. Anybody that looks at the article, check it out. I encourage you to do it. Bob does a great job kind of laying it out for you with a bunch of stats. Bob, Damon Snacks Harrison, it was reported that there were a couple other teams in Miami in particular that were trying to sign Snacks Harrison off of Seahawks practice squad. Do you think Snacks is in a position now, because there is legitimate interest, that he'll probably play this week, that there's some pressure to play him? Or do you think he's going to be fine being on whatever timeline or timetable that the Seahawks have him on?
Yeah, well, what's interesting from those is those are probably leaked from Snacks' side to sort of, make it. You guys can go look up who his agent is if you want. That's probably leaked from his side to sort of put that out there, the people are interested in it. And so it will be an interesting dynamic to watch. It's because of the new COVID testing rules, it's really hard to move in week and be eligible to play for a team that following week. So, once you're on a roster by basically Tuesday, you're probably kind of, stuck with the team you're on if you're on a practice squad at that time, because you're probably not logically going to be able to go anywhere else and be eligible to play. So in Harrison's case, I think, there is going to be some other interest out there. And I think if he doesn't feel like the Seahawks are going to play him and put him on the 53-man, which, that's ultimately why he's here, is to play, he probably will continue to explore those kind of options down the road. So I think this is a really key week to see where that goes. It was, sort of interesting that the way –
Pete Carroll kind of characterized it as they weren't able to get a whole lot out of it last week, the week before the bye. And they did take it really easy in practice that week. They didn't do a whole lot of really intense on-field work, just trying to keep everybody healthy and get to the bye being as healthy as possible and stuff like that. He said this week, I assume maybe it's Thursday, that they'll have more of a padded practice and things like that and really get a look at where he is physically. And that might really start to tell the tale there. But, yeah, I don't you can only be elevated off the practice squad, as you guys know, twice during the year anyway. So, I think at some point over the next 2 or 3 weeks, it'll be fish or cut bait on that, because either they'll elevate him and he'll play well and they'll put him on the 53-man, or he won't. I'd be stunned if he probably wanted to just hang around for the entire year just being on the practice squad.
Bob, how much impact on the defense do you think the Seahawks believe, that Daryl Taylor could still have if and when he comes back?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer, because they just haven't seen him do anything. I mean, literally, they've seen him do nothing. So, I think it's just more one of those, that just the potential that he showed. If he could get healthy, be one of those things. I mean, it's still only, kind of late-ish October. I mean, if he could get healthy over the next month and just, in December, their season sort of works out well with five games and then a bye, five games and then the mini bye, and then you got your last six games, that last six-game stretch there. And, so maybe if he could be healthy by that end of November time, when you get into those last six games or something like that, and sort of, potentially get him out there some, and, once the playoffs roll around, maybe he could really help you there. But I think, it's really hard to know that, because he's obviously done basically nothing since he had the surgery in January. He had the surgery, and so that kind of held him out of doing workouts and all that kind of stuff. And then he just hasn't done anything with the Seahawks yet. So, there's obviously a learning curve for any rookie, both physically and mentally. So, even if he could add, you get to the playoffs, and if you can just add 10 or 15 snaps and you make one big play here or something like that, it can be a big difference. So I think that's what they're holding out hope for. Not necessarily that he's going to become a starter and play 40 snaps a game or something like that, but if he can just even get into the rotation and just be a guy who can make a big play or two here or there, in a season like this, every little bit helps.
That's true. And, I mean, he still hopefully has a long career ahead of him. I mean, he's still a young kid, obviously. But I'm just curious as to what you think about whether or not they would have drafted him if they knew that he would be out this long.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a really tough thing to answer. Because, as you said, you're making picks a little bit more for the long haul, typically, when you're looking at these things. I mean, certainly you try to address immediate needs and things like that. But, a lot of times you're just looking at, can this guy, obviously with the way the rookie wage scale is, and you're getting, a guy for pretty cheap for 4 years. And so, these picks, any draft pick is always made for longer than just the first year that the guy is coming in. But certainly I think in his specific case, they, because of the needs they did have there, I think they were hoping for sure that he could come in and play there immediately. I mean, that was sort of the buzz when they got him, was, John Snyder flat out said he was a guy they were going to consider taking in the first round. And then they made the move to go get him in the second round. A guy that, there was sort of this immediate buzz that they really felt like he could come in and earn a starting job this year. So certainly the immediate was in there. Whether they knew for sure, we're still only five games into the season. So, if in five games or something like that he's playing and he plays well down the stretch and everything, I think that makes it look a little bit different. But certainly at the moment, it's a pick that, hasn't gone quite the way they would have hoped. Pete did say at some point that they didn't really anticipate it would take quite this long for all that to happen. But this is, this is such a weird year with everything going on. And Pete noted that his workout schedule really got disrupted when COVID hit, and he wasn't able to go do the same kind of workouts with the same sort of supervision and that kind of set him back and all that kind of stuff. And obviously they weren't able to have him here physically to do all that either. So it's a year when you maybe give some benefit of the doubt a little bit on some draft picks and things like that, and sort of wait for the long haul to really judge him.
All right. He is Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. You can go read his work on seattletimes.com. Bob, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Okay. Talk to you guys later.
Okay. Bye. Bye, Bob. I miss you already. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right. right, as we just asked Bob Condotta about, in case you missed it, Adam Schefter tweeting out that with Antonio Brown's suspension eligible to end after week 8, the Seattle Seahawks are now positioned to make a push to sign him. They're not the only ones, evidently, according to ESPN. What do you make of this news, Jacob?
Well, there's a couple different things brewing here when I hear this. Is one, we have heard this kind of conversation all offseason long, and I think one of the things that was curious for the Seahawks and for every other NFL team was this truly going to be 8 games, or was there going to be something more added on to Antonio Brown's suspension? The NFL league office coming out and saying that this is only going to be the 8-game suspension. There's nothing more that's going to be tacked onto it, and there's nothing that they are looking further into suspending Antonio Brown for. Gives teams the comfort, you could say, of signing him, knowing that there's not anything else legally that's going to detract Antonio Brown from playing or limit him from playing. The other aspect of this is, obviously, the question goes into, well, what about Josh Gordon? I think in this case, all right, with Josh Gordon, no one's had answers to this. But just doing a little bit of, what is it, inductive reasoning? What's the proper, just reading between the lines?
There you go.
Deductive reasoning, okay? I want to use the proper term here. Using a little bit of deductive reasoning here with Josh Gordon's situation, the NFL is not going to make statements about Josh Gordon not being successful in his return. And I think that that is what you're seeing here right now, that Josh, unfortunately, is not doing what he needs to do in order for the league to feel comfortable reinstating him. And if that's the case, already heading into week 6 of the NFL season, the Seattle Seahawks cannot sit there and expect and rely on that aspect of Josh Gordon getting reinstated. Therefore, now you know that Antonio Brown is having the opportunity to come back after 8 weeks. That's why you start to head in that direction if you're the Seahawks. So that's the reason why I think you're getting to this road of potentially the Seahawks maybe signing Antonio Brown and adding to an already explosive offense.
Second down. By the way, we'll come back to this throughout the show. We ain't going anywhere. Stacey, what are two stats we should know about the Cardinals heading into Sunday's game?
All right, I'm going to make both of these on offense because the strengths of Arizona on offense are essentially the opposite of Seattle. And that doesn't mean that they have a big weakness. It just means that they lean into the run in their run game. That includes Kyler Murray over the pass, while Seattle leans the opposite way. In fact, these two stats are almost exactly the same. For instance, Seattle ranks 17th in the rush, Arizona 4th. Seattle ranks 4th in the pass. Arizona is tied for 18th. So I'll break these down a little bit. Here's the two numbers you need to know. First of all, the Arizona Cardinals, 161. That's how many rushing yards they're averaging per game. That's 4th in the league. The Seattle Seahawks had one of the league's best rushing defenses up until their game against the Minnesota Vikings, when the Minnesota Vikings put up 200-plus yards against them. Over 100 of those came just in the second half from their backup running back, which isn't great. So hopefully Seattle's able to lock that down. You see another great game from that defensive line and those linebackers against Arizona, because Arizona will lean into that, especially on scrambles from Kyler Murray. On the opposite end of things, 241. That's how many passing yards Arizona is averaging. Again, that's tied for 18th in the league. Now, DeAndre Hopkins is leading the league in yards per game with 100.2. DK Metcalf, side note, right behind him with 99. But he isn't necessarily a guy that is... The love isn't always spread around on that offense. Kyler Murray has been relatively inconsistent. So even though DeAndre Hopkins, when he's targeted, is taking off, he's hauling in his catches. He's picking up yards after the catch. He's putting up a lot of yards per game. If you shut Hopkins down and put pressure on Kyler Murray, there is a way to make this offense a little more one-dimensional. So that's going to be the key for Seattle this Sunday.
Third down. The Seahawks being 5-0, Jake, proves which stat is arguably the most important above all others.
Well, I think the one that you could obviously say is points. Well, if you score more than the other team, then you're going to win a lot of football games. Duh. But the other in-depth stat that is probably right behind that is turnover differential. If you are winning the turnover battle, you're putting yourself in the best position possible to win football games. And the Seahawks are tied for first right now with the Tennessee Titans. They are plus six in their turnover differential. So we talk about the defense really struggling. The best way to combat that is to force turnovers and to be able to get the ball right back into your offense's hands where they can then turn those turnovers around into points. If they can convert those into points, it puts them in winning football situations despite the amount of yardage given up. And for the Seahawks to be able to win games, playing the way that they are, both offensively and defensively, they are going to have an unbelievable season in turnover differential. That's going to have to remain true if this defense is not able to get themselves back on track.
Fourth down. What will be the biggest challenge for the Seahawks defense this weekend against the Cards?
So that like pirate.
Cards.
Jake,
the biggest challenge for the Seahawks defense this weekend versus the Cardinals, yeah, you could look at Kyler Murray. He's a tremendous weapon. You can look at Kenyon Drake, who I would say would be right behind that. And Stacey obviously outlined DeAndre Hopkins. They have a lot of weapons offensively. But it's going to be this Seahawks defense ability to cover sideline to sideline. The one thing that the air raid system does, and what Cliff Kingsbury has done an excellent job of in his running schemes as well, is always putting the defense in a spread out system where if you are not disciplined in containing run gap responsibilities, if you're not responsible in your coverage assignments all across the field, you're going to be in a really, really tough spot. And I think that this group in particular on defense is going to be challenged as the next 5 weeks, as they play, you know, four of the five opponents are going to be NFC West offenses. This is what they do better than any other team. These three teams do this better than any other NFL offenses. They make you have to cover the entire field. And we'll see if the Seahawks can answer that challenge.
If you missed the show, you can always listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Here's my question for you guys. Do you want to see Antonio Brown in Seattle? It might be a very real possibility with a recent tweet from Adam Schefter, said the Seahawks are making a push. We'll debate whether or not that'll happen next. But I want you to text in 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Do you want to see Antonio Brown in Seattle? And you know what? If you do, I want you to text in too, because right now it's majority no. So if you want to make your case, I want to see it right now. All right, 710-710. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Are we going to see Antonio Brown in Seattle? That's the latest report. This one's from ESPN's Adam Schefter saying the Seahawks are going to be making a push for Seattle. Sounds like my interpretation of that report is that they're the front runner to sign the currently suspended wide receiver. Here's the question that I asked you guys. It's obvious. Do you want to see Antonio Brown in Seattle with the Seahawks? 710-710, that's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We're also going to be taking your calls. That's going to be later in the show. So I'm going to give you the number right now. I'm going to give it to you again before 2 o'clock, but hang on to this just in case. 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. We're going to be taking your calls at 2 p.m., so hang on to those. Right now, we're going to turn to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Before I do that, I want to hear from both of you guys. I don't think I do. That's where I am right now. I think it's probably going to happen, though. Tom, how do you feel about it?
Yeah. I don't think that this is a question of whether or not the league looks bad for letting him play, because I think as long as he's not incarcerated, he should be allowed to work. But that doesn't mean that an NFL team has to pick him up either. I think any team that picks him up is going to look bad for doing so. I was trying to quickly research in the last break, like, where we are exactly with all these accusations that have been thrown at him, sexual misconduct and so forth. As far as I can tell, none of it has been resolved. Maybe one allegation. I'm not quite sure. I mean, there's one woman, Brittany Taylor, who accuses him of three different counts of sexual assault. So that's three issues right there on top of a couple of other people, women who have accused him of this. So if the Seahawks go ahead and sign him without knowing what's going on, and maybe they do know what's going on. Maybe they vetted the situation fully.
I would hope so.
But I, yeah. But you know what? Do they, is there a way for them to know truthfully all the facts? I mean, have they consulted with his lawyers, her lawyers, the courts? Can they, do they even have access to that stuff? The police? I mean, this just seems like a something, if I were the owner of the Seahawks, I wouldn't want any part of. There's just too much going on here. I mean, on top of the fact that he's just a head case in general. I mean, all of his Twitter rants accusing the league of being racist because they profit on, off of his blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, come on, man. What world do you think we're living in here?
From the 425, no! From the 206, another no! 206, a separate one. If Russell Wilson wants him, what's the big deal? If he's the difference between us making it to a Super Bowl or not, I'm about getting that second Super Bowl trophy. Another 206. Yes on AB. His talent speaks for itself, and he's great at creating space on broken plays like Tyler Lockett. Perfect match for Russ. And then a couple other no's. One of them a Bruce Irvin. Heck no. It isn't heck, but you guys catch my drift. Jake, what do you think?
Tom asking the question of have they done all of the vetting in this situation? You would like to think so if they're going to make this kind of signing, and I would advocate and say that they have. They have done all the research on this guy. They have access to a whole lot of information that we do not have, and I think that they are, if they are, end up do signing Antonio Brown, they feel like that a lot of the legal stuff has been pretty much close to being resolved, if not already resolved, that they have the structure to be able to make this work. And also the reality of, look, they're going to have a zero tolerance policy with Antonio Brown. And they're going to take this and look at this as a flyer situation of if it works great. If it doesn't, and if he doesn't uphold to the standards of which they set, then they cut him without reservation and without penalty, similar to what happened with Josh Gordon. So I think that there's more serious things that are going on with Antonio Brown than there was with Josh Gordon. So I'm not comparing the two from that standpoint. I'm just saying it's similar from a contractual standpoint and from their tolerance standpoint if they bring somebody like this in.
But if he hasn't done anything, Jake, why would they put him on zero tolerance? If all this stuff is about to be resolved and he hasn't done anything wrong, then why? What
because
need is there to put
because
him
there's
on zero?
A lot.
There's multiple
there's
things, multiple infractions.
Well, there's more. I'm saying there's more to the story than just the legal stuff. Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown as a teammate. I think there's things that, as you look at it from what happened with the Pittsburgh Steelers, what happened with the Oakland Raiders. There's things that you have to make sure that you lay it out very clearly to Antonio Brown. This is how we do business here in Seattle, and if you can't uphold to those standards, we will let you go. I think that is exactly what I mean when I say that. So you know
so
the risks that there are associated. Yeah, this is a third chance, and there are other teams in the league, obviously not just Seattle, that are going to give him that potential chance. And here in Seattle, you feel you have a head coach potentially that feels like, hey, we can take this on. You have a quarterback, obviously, in Russell Wilson, who is more than advocated for this in the offseason. You have a backup quarterback who is Antonio Brown, one of his best friends. Geno Smith is one of Antonio Brown's best friends. So you have multiple people that feel like, hey, we feel like we can bring this guy in and this can be a successful thing for the team to go and win a Super Bowl and make this offense that much more dynamic. So, yeah, if that's the idea, you bring him in on a zero tolerance policy and that's the way that they're going to conduct things.
Tom, you think four chances is too many?
Well, when you when you lower your standards, you're basically admitting that this person is incapable of adhering to, like, cultural norms. So, I don't really know what that says about us.
All right, a couple more from the text line. We're going to get back to this. Don't worry. 253, I would like AB in Seattle. The Diva Talk I don't think will be a problem because this whole team is already bought into the culture and Russ's team. From the 253, no, Brown was a headache in Oakland, was a headache in the end in Pittsburgh. We don't need a receiver who demands the ball. We had Jimmy Graham for that. First of all, keep Jimmy Graham's name out of your mouth. He did nothing wrong here. From the 206, absolutely not. We don't need another receiver, even if he's excellent. We have plenty of talent, and while it's always good to have another great quality player, they need to spend money on defense. Oh, don't worry, 206. I'm going to get into that, too. But first, we're going to get into the timeline. Now, we've got a couple updates that you guys are going to like, some fun ones. But you guys, I'm going to throw something in here. So we're going to have World Series updates. We got to talk about Mookie Betts. We got to talk about free tacos for all of America. I want to get into, though, a story that you guys weren't expecting, but I want to talk about it. We'll get to that next. It's a little controversial this morning on Twitter. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. We got some news on Antonio Brown from ESPN's Adam Schefter, so I'm calling an audible. Normally, this is where we have the timeline. We go over some fun stories, some controversial stories on Twitter. I would say this is a controversial story because the Viziart Seltzer text line, 710-710, blowing up right now on people deciding whether or not they want to see Antonio Brown in Seattle. The report, by the way, that the Seahawks are pursuing Antonio Brown. He's still suspended, but they are reportedly, I think the understanding is, the front runner for trying to bring him to the Seahawks. Offense is already just completely lighting the world on fire. Antonio Brown in would obviously make that better, but obviously his checkered past, his legal history, his suspension is leaving a lot of people questioning whether or not it's the right fit. So before we get started, Tom has an opinion, Jake has an opinion. You guys are going to want to hear them because I think they represent a healthy portion of the fan group. First, I'm going to throw to Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll had this to say earlier today, just a couple minutes ago, when asked about Antonio Brown.
We have endeavored to be in on everything that's going on, and John has done a marvelous job of always being tuned into what's happening, and this is no exception, you know. So we'll see what happens, you know, as we go forward. But we're tuned into what's happening there.
Now, Pete Carroll's never going to be, like, open about whatever they're doing. So tuned in is Pete Carroll speak for, like, yeah, they're looking at it. He's not going to shoot it down. This, Tom, made me think of your argument. Someone texted in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. So that everyone knows, Tom isn't exactly in favor of bringing Antonio Brown in. Someone said...
Yeah, I want to make sure I clarify my position after you're done here.
Okay. Someone said, I think if you take a team vote and let them decide. If the team agrees to have Brown, then everyone's on the same page. So, Tom, my question for you here is, if the team is fine with it, if players are comfortable with it, why not be okay with it?
As a fan, like, what if the team's okay with it? Because, I mean, obviously the team's not going to decide whether he's on the team. That's up to the GM.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't like
this isn't literally
baseball.
A team vote.
Right. I mean, the reason why the opinion of the team doesn't affect my opinion is because I'm an individual and I have my own thoughts. So they're allowed to think what they want. And I think, you know, if they get together and they think that that's cool, then that's cool for them. Like, that will, if he does join the team, that would certainly make it easier if they are all on the same page. It's a complicated issue because the more I think about it, the more I'm realizing, like, it's not a question of whether or not I think they should. If we want to talk about whether or not they need a wide receiver, any wide receiver, we can have that conversation. And I've already said no. But if they got one, like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm not going to, like, be up in arms about that. This is about a person and the accusations that have been levied against him. Okay? It's not a question of whether or not I think they should. They're private business owners. Meeting the Allens or John Schneider or whoever you want to put this on, they have the choice as to whether or not they want to employ this person. I, the fan, then have a choice as to whether or not I want to support that decision I don't. So basically all that means is that when he catches a touchdown, I don't cheer. I still root for them. And maybe if he catches the, I guess the worst case scenario being he catches the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl or something, and I'm left with mixed feelings about it. But that's the choice, that's the situation the Seahawks have put me in as one of their fans. So it's complicated, but, you know, I can choose to cheer or not. For him, I probably will not, because even aside from the sexual allegations, I think his behavior is either at times psychotic and at times idiotic. I'm not really sure which.
Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, Stacey Ross here, talking about the latest news. This from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Antonio Brown's suspension is eligible to end after week 8, and the Seattle Seahawks are positioned to make a push to sign him, one of several teams that are interested. Jake, does Antonio Brown belong in Seattle? Should he be here?
Well, does he belong in Seattle? Should he be here? As Tom was making articulating, you know, kind of his stance on it, there's somewhere in there that I feel the same way. It's not whether I think that he deserves to be there or not. It's whether this team thinks that he deserves to be there. And if he's going to, and what I have articulated through the offseason, everybody's like, well, Jake, why are you advocating for AB to be a part of the Seahawks? Why are you defending him? I'm not. I am strictly telling you exactly why and what they are thinking. They are thinking that with Antonio Brown in this situation, that it helps take them to another level potentially, that it makes them such a dynamic offense that a defense, and in a year where historic numbers are being set and historically bad defense is being played, you make it that much more difficult on opposing defenses and within your own division. Here is Russell Wilson from his own mouth in training camp talking about the idea of the Seahawks potentially signing a player like Antonio Brown. Here's what Russell Wilson said about it.
And then Antonio, I was able to work with him this offseason. He's one of the best receivers of all time, you know, so. You know, anytime you can get a guy like that, you know, you're always into that idea for sure. You know, we want playmakers for sure. I mean, and the more playmakers you get, you know, the harder it is. And you know, our division is a tough division.
So from that standpoint alone, looking at this from a football sense, you're saying you're adding one of the best receivers in the game in a way that you normally would not have the opportunity to add. You put him along and pair him with DK Metcalf, with Tyler Lockett. What are you going to do as a defense? What decisions are you going to make? And Antonio Brown, oddly enough, you think that there would be rust on him, and there might be, you never know, but he's been working out this entire time. He worked out with Russell Wilson in the offseason. So from that standpoint, there is a confidence level that you feel that he could come in and kind of plug and play into the system. That's kind of where they're coming from.
I have a question for the people who are texting in support of the Seahawks doing this. Is the reason why you think that because you think he's innocent of sexual misconduct? Because if you think he's guilty, or there's a possibility that he's guilty, and you still want him on the team, like you want him on the team, that's a little weird. Like, I'm not here to tell anybody what they should think, but that's a strange opinion that I'm not really sure how you would justify that. Like, if you think maybe, okay, it's inconclusive, or while we don't know, I'm willing to, you know, innocent until proven guilty, I'm willing to abide by that. Like, I'm fine with all that. But if you think there's a possibility that he's done any of this, and you still support his being on the team, I don't quite understand that opinion.
Yeah, I think that the majority of what I've seen on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line has been, look, this defense is really bad. Well, it's either been, I would say the majority has been against signing Antonio Brown. The ones that are for it, and unless I've overlooked yours and you did make Tom's point, I apologize in advance. The ones I am seeing that are in favor of it are saying, look, the defense is bad. Why not add another weapon to this offense? And if the team is comfortable with it and they want it, who am I to say no? I think that's the general consensus I'm seeing from the positive ones. I'm not saying this like just as a woman. I think man or woman, you should feel very bothered by any kind of sexual harassment. I would hope that the team has done diligent research, because I think that we have a problem, not just in sports, but with many facets of putting aside any real consequence to sexual harassment or anything like that in favor of things that matter more to us as fans, winning, being great. And I would hate to see an organization that I do think people typically have a lot of respect for, with the Seattle Seahawks, do something like that. So I would hope that they have done their due diligence on this one. And again, not just saying that as a woman, I'm saying it as someone who believes this should matter to everyone.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, what if there were a video of this behavior?
And if there was, yeah, absolutely. It'd be awful. And I think that he would be gone from the league in general. But also, at the same time, flipping that, again, I'm not defending him, but I also have to lean my faith into the team's, into who I think that Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson, who these people are, and the research that they have done into this situation. And he has not been convicted of any of these situations. And I would hope that they would be looking at this not innocent until proven guilty, because I don't want to take that approach necessarily, because there's been a lot of people that have gotten off with that, but that they have done their research in this situation and have said, okay, it looks like in this state that Antonio Brown would win his case and that he is not guilty of the charges that have been, that he's been accused for. That's what I would hope would be the case if you're talking about the Seahawks adding Antonio Brown. So then the question becomes, as you'd mentioned earlier, Tom, do you have faith? Do you not? Thinking with your own mind versus what the team's telling you, because there's been in history circumstance where teams have taken that chance and that risk, and that player does end up becoming guilty of the charges that he's been had, and vice versa. So that, I think that's really where this is such a difficult topic, to be honest.
It is incredibly difficult. Yeah, I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly where I fall on it. People that I have respect for, not just as someone covering the team, but just as people, have good relationships with this person. Now, that doesn't make someone innocent. There are many people who have done bad things that have good relationships with other people. It is easier for me to swallow this news and try to think about it carefully and with an open mind, knowing that people like Russell Wilson have a very good relationship with him. Geno Smith, who I also have respect for as a player, as a person, has a good relationship with him. I trust this organization. I think that they usually have, I think, ideals and goals that I agree with, not just as someone who watches, but as a person. That doesn't mean it's easy to figure out how you feel about it. I'm very, very torn on this. We're actually going to open up the phone line. So I'm going to keep looking at the Vizzy Hard Seltzer tax line, 710-710. Do you want to see Antonio Brown with the Seahawks? Yes or no? Please give a reason, because I'm going to be reading a few of these. But we also want to open up the phone line. So if you want to call in, we're going to take your calls next. 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Again, I'm going to read the local number. That's 206-421-3776. Do you want to see Antonio Brown with the Seahawks? This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy.